Oh, it's the season of giving, and you are being given another Christmas spectacular. Mike Burlow, as you fumble with your headphones.
What's going on? Hey, Scott, I'm here. What's going on?
We are very thankful here at Christmas time for our awesome sponsors.
Mm-hmm.
They help keep the lights on a little bit. They help pay for some of our podcast expenses and whatnot. But we have awesome sponsors, and they're businesses that I love to promote, and I'm very happy to be working with all year long. Let's start with Joe Fisher and his gang at Manskirt Brewing. Located in Hackettstown. Hackettstown, mm-hmm. Right in the old bank building. They got a lot of things going on. They're expanding the brewery. Okay. So they went from 4 taps. Now they're going to 8 taps.
Amazing.
So there's going to be a lot of different variety going on. What's really cool is they're looking at canning their beer sometime in mid-January. It should be mm-hmm. canned so you could buy their beer.
Well, Joe did break that one can, so it might delay production.
Yeah. and then they got Penny Top Amber Ale coming out in about 2 weeks, along with Wee Bastards Wee Heavy. Go to Manskirt. They're awesome seasonally inspired beers. And they're just fun. Yeah. Just go there and have a good time.
Middle of Hackettstown near some other breweries, well, so you can make a whole tour of it. But you definitely got to visit Joe, man. He's a hell of a nice guy and a hell of a sponsor.
And he wears a skirt, so it's worth seeing that. Now, the other brewery that sponsors the podcast, one of my favorite breweries in New Jersey, right off of 287, Demented Brewing. It's a brewery. They have space to expand. They have an awesome tap room with like a really cool mural with like all these demented things. Mm. And it's just really cool. And the people there are nothing but awesome. They have 16 taps. Mm-hmm. Okay, 16 taps. Every Sunday they release a bottle. Every Sunday they release a new beer, I should say. They have a barrel.
You can bring a bottle and pour it in there.
They have a barrel series. They have a sour series, and they're just exploding. Both of these breweries have only been open for like a year, which is awesome. They just released Hansel and Gretel, their gingerbread inspired winter warmer. This Sunday they're releasing Envy Chicory Stout. Chicory Stout by Dogfish, one of my favorite beers ever. I can't wait to try Demented's take on that. They're also running a special on barrel-aged bottles for the holidays. So when you hear this, you can go there. You can buy one, get one half off. So it's a great gift for yourself. You know what? You don't get those bottles for Christmas. Buy them for yourself.
Exactly.
Buy them for your dad. Buy them for your grandpa. Buy them for your grandma so she re-gifts them back to you. So it's an investment long term.
Awesome.
Right. And that would bring us to our other sponsors, our longest sponsor on the podcast, Wolf Nation. You know, Wolf, I can't look at you while you're doing that. I have to, like, look at the wall. The sound is good. The sound's pretty good. But your face doing it, you look like the wolf that was left behind. Like, but anyway.
Yeah, that's the story of my life. Wolf Nation. That's going to be my autobiography.
W-U-L-F. Wake up, live free. Basically just clothing and apparel for people who want to do their own thing. They want to make their way in life. They want to be a comedian. They want to be a musician. They want to be a clothing entrepreneur. Whatever it is, you can do it.
Yeah, okay? Living the dream, wearing the label.
Listen, we all think about it all the time, and every day it gets closer and closer. But Wolf Nation, they had a lot of things coming out in 2017. So go check them out on Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. WULF Nation. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Basically, trivia all over the state of New Jersey now. If you want to come try the trivia out, come Wednesdays. I host at Tap House 15, which is also home to our comedy shows.
Jefferson, New Jersey.
But they have trivia everywhere. It's a fun night out. You can win prizes to the bar. You can win prizes to craft breweries in New Jersey. Even if you're in last place, you could win. There's a bonus item every week. It's just a lot of fun. It's a good night out. So go to Trivia Revolution. Give them a follow on Instagram and Facebook. And tell them Verbal Shenanigans sent you. This episode of the podcast, we have a very special member from a very popular Christmas movie. You'll find out in a little bit. And our good friend Dom calls in. We call him.
He called you back.
That's true. He called in. First live caller. Yes. Yes.
Moving up in the world.
Live caller. So with that, Merry Christmas, everybody. Enjoy your holidays and enjoy the podcast.
We love you.
Hey, this is Ian Petrella, a.k.a. Randy Parker. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun. Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cool, right? Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
All right, Mike Burlow. Merry Christmas, buddy. Happy holidays.
Yeah.
Happy holidays.
There's like six holidays in this area.
Kwanzaa. Merry Christmas. Hanukkah, what's the...
Ramadan.
All that stuff. But it's... this is year... I can't remember. Is this three Christmas episodes we've done? We've definitely done two. I know that.
Yeah. I'm trying
but to... I don't know if we've done four. Probably three.
I would guess three.
Yeah, because three would be 2 years because it would, you know, like it could be. So, but welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. And it is our Christmas, our holiday spectacular here. Yeah, it's the time of year. Are you feeling, I know, we know how much you love Christmas and all things Christmas.
I don't hate Christmas.
Well, you got to explain, now we've heard it before, but you got to explain your mom and the Christmas music to everybody.
Well, I mean, she loved Christmas music to an obsessive level. So it would get to the point where every year she would be playing it earlier and earlier, and she would be continuing it later and later after Christmas.
Like, how early are we talking? Like,
literally, Halloween.
Oh, boy.
Literally, Halloween.
Halloween.
Yeah. Oof. It's like, well, we're 2 months away. Yeah, give it a month and a half. And basically what I can say is we had the sound system that was back in the days where everything had to be huge. It was probably a good 6 feet long, like 8 feet high.
Yeah.
And she had every single Christmas CD to ever exist. I mean,
is there like when you think back right now, is there like a particular song that like, it's like, oh, God, that's the one that really... Like,
it wasn't even a Christmas one. Like, she used to play some song. It was like, I don't even know who did it. It was some song called Ain't Nothing Like the Real Thing, Baby. And she...
You mean Ain't Nothing But a G Thing?
No, no. Because
that was...
My mom didn't have street cred.
Oh, man. No. It'd be just... It would just be great if your mom blasted Ain't Nothing But a G Thing all day long.
You're not certified! Stop it! I'm trying to... I mean, the Mariah Carey one, she would overplay.
You're like, Mom!
Mom! I just got home!
Mom, stop! All the kids outside are like, yeah, Mitch Barlow!
Mom, all the kids are dancing in the front lawn. Stop it! You're embarrassing me!
I don't see how this is a Christmas song!
But it was... Beginning in the morning, it's like she would get up to get start getting things ready for my dad would go to work at like 6 a.m. I'd be getting up around that time to get ready for school. And the second you wake up, you hear Christmas music.
Yeah.
And then you do your school, you come home, you're hearing Christmas music. And then you're trying to watch TV, and she's blasting Christmas music till like 10 p.m. So, nonstop.
Yeah, I could see how that could... Now, lengthwise, are we talking like into February, that long?
She would go a week into New Year, claiming, well, New Year's is a holiday, so the week...
Ukrainian Christmas hasn't happened yet, you know.
it was just...
Yeah, I could see why that would put a couple scars on the brain, you know, definitely.
And it's kind of like what we talk about on the show, like, I don't mind, like, when I go into... certain places and it's kind of light in the background, and even once in a while you'll hear a tune and you kind of start humming along with it. It's the whole, you get in the car, hey, let's put on Christmas music. No.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, I want it to naturally show up in my life. I don't want it to be forced down my throat.
So you want natural Christmas.
Yeah. Just walk, like if I walked into your house and it's like you got the TV going and it's playing in the background, All right, that's cool.
All right. Now, you, I know you mentioned, like, you didn't have, like, any, like, big birthdays, but was Christmas a good holiday in your
Christmas
house?
Christmas was good. That was the deal with my father. He would tell us, you know, we'll say happy birthday, maybe get a cake, but we really didn't do, like, big gifts on
I gotta
on
shut the Snoop Dogg off in the background. It doesn't even make sense anymore.
I'm trying to podcast!
Mom, I know it's nothing but a G-Day!
God! That's why I became a crypt. I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
But he would say, you know, I don't give out big birthday gifts because I just lap everything into Christmas. So, you know, we know to have a good turnout. And I had some great gifts along the way. My dad did very well in that. And family would be over. We'd all eat in our parents' basement on the pool table. So they would convert it.
While the game was going on, right?
Yeah.
Meatball, corner pocket. No. But yeah, that's good. Yeah, Christmas was great in my house. I can't even like be like, but Christmas was always like definitely something to look forward to. My parents always went way above and beyond, like definitely when we didn't even have it. You know, they somehow found a way. Because we were definitely not well-to-do.
Yeah.
We were pretty much the middle class. Like, we were as middle class as it gets. Like, you know, Dad worked at the car shop all day long, like his repair shop, all day long. But Christmas is always good. Christmas Eve, still to this day, one of my favorite days of the year. Just because we always went to my aunt's house and saw the fun side of the family.
Yeah.
Whereas like, the other side was like Christmas Day. So, like, but we would see the fun side. We still do. But I'm a little depressed this year. My cousin Johnny, I think I've told you about this. My cousin Johnny and I, every Christmas Eve for probably 15 years now, have played each other. Yeah, it's probably about 15 years, maybe more than that. We have played each other in NFL Blitz.
Mm-hmm.
The original NFL Blitz for PlayStation.
Pittsburgh versus Chicago.
Pittsburgh versus Chicago. I'm Pittsburgh, he's Chicago. And it's gone back and forth. Like, I went on like a 5-year run. And
What was it? Bettis versus Ennis? Was it?
Yeah, Ennis was
the Bears
guy. And I got him the jersey for the grab bag.
I remember that.
He moved to Texas, and he's usually into the holiday. He's not coming this year. What? The tradition ends this year. I mean, it could pick up again, but the streak is over. I said, somehow we got to figure out, can you play it online? Like, is there
There's got to be some way on Xbox.
There's got to be some way to keep this going. But we play every year, and it gets heated. We're screaming in the house like idiots. Now we're 30-something years old screaming like, oh! You know, and like, and that's like how the announcer's like, oh, he's on my... Like, basically, NBA Jam. And it gets heated, and I've lost 2 in a row now, and I was really looking forward to warming up the bus and getting Cordell Stewart all primed and ready to go.
Slash.
But it's not going to happen. I'm a little depressed about it, man. I'm a little depressed. But Christmas is always good, man. I like Christmas. Like, it gets a little crazy with the money expenditure and the pressure.
You know, especially, I still got a few on my plate to get. So.
Especially when, like, you don't have... I hate when you don't have any ideas. That's the worst feeling.
Yeah.
Like, it's nice when you have some ideas, and it's like, okay.
I used to be really good, like, when I was in my early teens, and I said, okay, I'm going to start getting all my family Christmas gifts. And there was a streak I was just hitting.
On fire! Mike is here! Boom! Gift for you! Boom! Gift for you! Oh, my God, a car! Yeah.
Nah, I mean, I wouldn't do gift... I mean, for the longest time, I'm like, no gift cards.
That's when IT was booming.
Around the days when I was like, yeah, I like this job. I could see me doing this for a while.
Oh, my God. Windows 2001? Awesome.
But I remember there was a one streak there. My one cousin, I just kind of forgot stuff and whatever. 3 years in a row, I got her lamps and all. And she's like, what the fuck? 3 years in a row.
What the hell? 3 in a row I got her lamps.
Yeah. One was like the decorative ones where they have the dolphins inside and it circles around the lamp.
Yep.
And one was, I forget what the second one was, but the third one was a lava lamp and she's just, dude, what the hell?
Yeah. I got.
I don't need this much light in my house.
That's funny. My aunts tell me this story. My dad, he was working in his shop, and you know, my dad, he's your average dude, you know, but he's working, and a salesman comes in. This was back in the day where it was very common for salesmen to come in and be like, "Hey, buy your this knife, buy blah 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 blah," and like show off what they got. And then
I come up from corporate in Pittsburgh, and here's this vacuum cleaner.
So they showed him a bunch of wigs, like wigs were in apparently, and apparently he bought his two sisters, my aunt's wigs, and they were like, "What the hell is this?"
So,
like,
so this guy walked into the auto shop with a bunch of wigs,
and my dad bought them. And gave them wigs, and like to this day, they're still like, "Remember when you gave us wigs for Christmas?" Like, he was like very young, maybe like 18 years old.
Like, what was the style of the wig?
I don't know. I gotta. Well, it's funny because one thing I am doing this Christmas break, I am going to my aunt's house. My dad's a man's man. He doesn't tell me like all the. He doesn't know a lot about the history of his family and stuff like that. And my aunt is like the family historian. And like we started talking the other night, a couple weeks ago, and like she knows everything about my grandfather and Germany and the foxholes. And she has all these things that she's books into. So I'm really looking forward to it. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to bring this recorder. Shut up. And record it and send it to all my cousins. Like, go. She's gonna give me like the whole family history. So I'm just gonna email all my cousins. Like, they might not know it, you know, like all this stuff, and they could save it on their hard drive forever. And so I mean, even if it's good, I might play a couple clips on the podcast, like if it's interesting enough. But and I know my great great grandmother was the aunt on the Beverly Hillbillies, the grandma on the Beverly Hillbillies.
Really?
Yeah. Or aunt. I'm gonna find all that information out so I can really solidify it. But definitely gonna do that. But yeah, maybe I'll find out the wig style too. What that was. But I want to get our guest going. Going early here, because a lot of times we talk too long and then they're on like 45 minutes in.
Yeah,
and
people are like, "Wait, we're a good 2 minute talk podcast," and then bring on the guests.
We're like a 5 minute guest spot, like we're a check job spot. But all right, Berlo, you Christmas movies are starting. I really haven't watched any yet. I watched the Always Sunny Christmas special the other night. That's a classic. I would say my top three, my wheelhouse. I know we mentioned this before a little bit before we started recording, but just to blend the recordings in anyway. Number one for me is Christmas Story. Okay. Number two and three are probably It's a Wonderful Life and Christmas Vacation. That would be my top three. Elf might round out that four. That might be my Mount Rushmore there. Elf's a great movie. How about you?
Yeah, I'd probably put Elf 1, Christmas Story 2. I love Christmas Story. It, just on the lines of the 24-hour thing, kind of took a little bit away from it. You know, loved it as a kid. I still love it as an adult. It just...
I like have it on in like the background. Like I'll just like to me like all like Christmas Day. Sometimes like I'm like a late rapper. Sometimes too, I'll get up Christmas morning like 6-7 o'clock, have a cup of coffee.
Then you put on the Warren G song.
Well, I like that you call all rappers Warren G, but you mean Snoop Dogg? Ain't nothing but a G thing.
Yeah,
but it could be Warren G. Yeah. And I'm just rapping presents. I'm like.
Gonna love this.
This would be great. It'd be great if, like, every morning, like, your mom's like, "Get up, boys!
I'm trying to sleep in today."
It's the S L E E P. What was I saying? Christmas Story. It's like this nostalgic thing now, like where it's like on the background. Oh, I'll catch this part for 10 minutes. Walk out of the room. 5 minutes here. I can see how it can be overboard, but the only time I watch it. I don't think it's on any other time, like during the year, even the weeks leading up to it.
It's pretty much TNT 24-hour Christmas Eve. So, and number three would be Charlie Brown Christmas.
I think Obi's eating the garbage, but so here's what we got going on here. I reached out all week. Okay. I was struggling for what would be a good Christmas episode. It really, nothing was coming to me because we've done some things in the past, like different games and stuff. And I'm like, just like the Halloween episode where I said we got to get some kind of Halloween themed guest. You found Larry Zerner from one of the Friday the 13th movies. I went out and pretty much emailed every cast member. of Christmas Story. And I did come up with one. So Ian Petrella, who was Randy, which is Ralphie's brother, Randy, famous for the coat scene and the mashed potato scene. Very cool dude. So we're going to get him on, and this is our interview with Ian Petrella.
Hello?
Hey, is this Ian?
Ian, how you doing?
Ian, it's Scott Brennan here from Verbal Shenanigans Podcast, and there's my co-host here, Mike Berlew.
Evening, sir.
Hello.
How's it going, man? Thanks for popping on for a few minutes.
Oh, no problem. How you doing?
Good, man. I was just saying, I went on like kind of a mad dash to kind of email or message the cast of Christmas Story to try to get some kind of Christmas-themed guest and whatnot. And I'm sure you've been asked about this thousands of times, especially the movie grows. It's on 24 hours every year. I'm sure you probably get people like us looking for you.
Around December 2nd, you go, oh, God, here they come, the tidal wave.
Yeah, here come the podcasters.
Yep.
But so, Ian, first off, how old were you when you, well, first off, for the audience, you played Randy. You played Ralphie's brother. How old were you when this all went down?
8 years old.
8 years old. Now, how did this all go, like, happen in your life? Were you a child? Were you in acting? Was it, did something come along and get you on? Like, what went on there?
Oh, I found it on Craigslist.
Oh, good. That was in the back of the paper.
No, I was. No, excuse. Sorry, I always say that'd make it fun for me too. You know,
absolutely.
I was a child actor growing up. I started when I was around 3 years old, and it was just, you know, your regular run of the mill audition. And that's all it was, and I just happened to get the part.
Okay. Now the script and whatnot, did you guys have, did you like the script initially, or were you just kind of there doing your thing? Like, you were 8 years old, so, like, how much were you really aware of?
Oh, I was completely aware. I mean, by the time I was 8 years old, I pretty much knew that, you know, what this was, and, you know, this was acting, and this was a job. Mm-hmm. So I knew I was going to be in a movie, and that was, I mean, you that was exciting as all hell,
right?
You know, even at 8 years old, to, you know, and I was going to be working with Peter Billingsley, who was Messy Marvin, and he was on Real People, and I was working with Melinda Dillon, who was the mom in Close Encounters, which was one of my favorite movies. So there was a lot that I was completely aware of what I was going to be doing, and the fact that you're going to see how movies are made. And you're going to be in this one, and then this movie's going to be on the screen. You're going to be on the big screen, like Indiana Jones and all the other people that idolize and worship, you know, for your entire life. So I was completely aware what I was doing.
That's all. Now, did you guys know the script, like this had any potential to be something big? Obviously, I can't imagine you guys thought it would be this big, where it's played on Christmas every year for 24 hours. But did you know it was going to be something received amazingly well?
I didn't. I mean, at that point in time, you know, I mean, I didn't even really read the script. And I didn't really even have to. Randy had like three lines, you know, that was it. You know, and he just cried, laughed, and fell down. Randy pretty much was just like the R2-D2 of that movie. And so it just, like, this is what you're going to be doing in this scene. You're going to fall down. Okay. And that's it. So I didn't have to really prepare, and I didn't have to get into like this method, you know, form to do to Randy, and everything. So, but I mean, even at the time, you know, that's one thing always, you know, everybody always asks is, you know, did you think? I didn't think. I didn't know.
Right.
As far as did Bob Clark, the director, or, you know, Gene Shepard, or Rene DuPont. I mean, I'm probably sure they had an idea that this is going to be a good movie, because everybody who worked on it loved the idea of it. You know, it was not one of those movies where people walked around and, you know, it was like, oh, this is going to be BS, you know. No, everyone was like, this is going to be really good. I think this is going to be funny. This is going to be a good scene. But unfortunately, it didn't happen back in 1983.
Right.
It didn't happen for the film. It was just kind of a fluke. It came out and then it was gone. And then it wasn't until, I think, 99 when the 24-hour marathon. And that was just supposed to be a fluke.
Right.
That was just supposed to be a one-time thing. That they're like, oh, we think it's let's play the movie for 24 hours. See what happens. And it turned into, you know, the Super Bowl of the holiday season. Because now everybody watches it.
Yeah.
And so it just, you know. And then, you know, they're making so much money just off of the advertising alone. You know. So it's all kind of a very weird experience with this movie and to be a part of. You know, because there was a whole almost 20 years where nothing happened. you got nothing, nobody. So and then 20 years later, it's like, we love this movie. So.
Now, to be fair, I looked on IMDb. I count at least 6 lines for Ian on that.
Oh.
Yeah, so he's kind of holding back. I'm not counting the oink noises or the laughing.
Well, those are
I had 6 lines? Wow. Okay. All right. Well, I always try to humble myself, you know.
And the movie was set in like the 1940s. And at that age, were you able to get like all the references, or did like your parents have to explain stuff or the producers?
Yeah, I mean, there was some stuff they had to explain. You know, but I mean, other than that, I never really felt like, you know, this movie, you know, they weren't using like any type of like 1940s slang, you know, as much. I think there was one time like when the old man was cussing and the mom says, little pitchers, and I was like, what does that mean? And I think that was the only time I'm like, what? I don't understand it. I don't get that. And I think I still don't even really know what it means. It's something about like little pitchers, meaning Linda tried to explain it to me and she said, because pitchers have large handles and that's like ears. But that's what little pitchers mean. I'm like, huh?
Hmm.
The reference to ears. Like, okay, I still don't get it. But
you're explaining it, I don't get it.
Fine.
Yeah.
That still doesn't make any sense. The explanation doesn't make it, but it's like with someone's, you know, shouting obscenities, you know, in front of a child. You know, nowadays they say earmuffs, and the kids cover up their ears, where the, you know, the mom will say little pitchers, and it's like, you know, just say there's children in the room or something. I don't know. So that was, I think, the one thing that I didn't. But everything else, you know, you pretty much understood.
Yeah.
You know, like decoder rings. Like, you know, you get, okay, it's a decoder ring. You're, like, that's what kids did, I guess, back then, is they had these little things in decipher messages. Okay, whatever. But, yeah.
Now, what do you think about the movie? Like, what do you think grabs people's attention this many years later? Like, why has it become a classic? Like, why do you think?
I think there's a couple reasons why. One is the reason why I think the movie is so popular now is because it was a movie that people discovered on their own. It wasn't put out, you know, because it wasn't out in the theater so long and the studios didn't shove it down everybody's throat like everybody, you know, most studios do when a movie comes out.
Mm-hmm.
And reminding you, this is the movie you need to see. This is the movie you need to see. And then the movie comes out and everybody goes to see it. And they go, that was great. And then they forget about it. This was one movie that people kind of discovered on their own. It's like hearing an indie band, you know, that doesn't have a record deal. And you go out, you go to a club, you hear this band. You're like, wow, this band's really good. And you tell that one person, you need to go check out this band. Well, where do I find them? You know what? I got the tape. Let me give you the tape, and you make a duplicate, you know, CD, and go here. You got to check them out. And then they check them out. They're like, wow, this band is really good. And then they tell their friends. They're like, oh, I got to go find this band. So then when that band finally shows up, and they're like, oh, let's go. And the next thing you know, that band is, you know, a fan base. I think there's one reason that how this movie survived. Number two is, and everybody in the cast will have their own theories as to what people like about this movie. So, and I'm not here to debate that because, you know, we just have our own theories. But my thing is, right, one of the things that people like about this movie, and like I said, this is my feeling, is because everybody at one point in time in their life, and still to this day, has had a Red Ryder, has had something that they've all wanted so badly that they're willing to do anything for it, and they fantasize about having it and how it could change their life. And we've all had that. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be a job, could be a car, could be, you know, a love interest. It's just one of those, you know, it's just that typical story of that the person trying to achieve something that they want really bad and what they have to do and what they have to go through. So, and that's, I think, what connects to everybody. You know, like I said, you know, they're, you know, the other cast members will have different ideas, you know, but I think everybody could have their own idea of what this movie means to them. So,
and I guess under the independent rock theme, once the sequels come out, we go, oh, they weren't as good as their originals.
Pretty much. I mean, I don't know. I haven't seen all the sequels. I saw My Summer Story, and that wasn't too bad. I didn't see the last one that came out, Christmas Story 2.
Yeah.
And
I didn't even know there was one until right now.
Yeah, there was a came out.
I know
a couple
Summer
years
Story,
ago.
But I never heard of Christmas Story 2.
A Christmas Story 2.
Yep.
Yes,
2012 and, came out.
Yeah, I haven't seen it. I haven't seen it because, and I'm not opposed to it because when I heard they were making it, I wasn't against it. I said, okay. But I remember all of us in the cast, you know, we had, you know, said that we wanted to, we would offer to be in it just as cameos because it was supposed to take place when Ralphie was 16, not 9 years old anymore. So we know we're like, you know, they're not going to call us to reprise our roles. We understand that.
Right.
But we're like, hey, you know, we would love to at least do cameos. You know, even if it's just like one line here, one line there, we would be more than happy to do it. And they said, we're going to decline that because we want to try and stay away from the original as possible. We want to do something completely different. And I actually respected that. I thought, that's cool. You know, go ahead. You know, do that. If you want to do something on your own and stay away, then, you know, we'll, you know, I'll back off. You know, it's completely, go on your own and do your own thing. Come up with a new style and a new vision, go ahead. But when I asked what the name was, they didn't have a title yet. And then the trailer came out, and the trailer was called A Christmas Story 2, and they took the lead actor and made him look exactly like Peter Billingsley with the blonde hair and the glasses and the blue eyes. And then they had like all the same rhythms and all the same beats, just like the frickin' movie. And I was like, you a-holes, that is completely going off of that. Why would you do that? You know, I was so happy when I thought they said that they wanted to do something so original to their own vision and they wanted to come up with something new. I respected that, and I thought that was a very good way to go. But no, they totally used everything that they possibly could because, you know, they just used, like, the branding, you know, idea to get everybody in. So I'm like, yeah, I'll wait for this one. I don't have to go see it. So that's too bad, you know.
Now, Ian, are you sick of the movie at this point? Are you sick of people like me trying to get in touch with you and just talk to you for a few minutes? Or do you still enjoy it? Do you still enjoy connecting with fans of the movie? Or
I'm not sick of it. I'm really not. You know, it's just, you kind of get, you get used to it.
Right.
And over the years, you have to understand. I mean, the other thing is, you know, I don't talk about it all year round. It's like a small window that people want to come talk to you. And then that's it. After January, you guys are going to want to talk to me. So would rather have other stuff to talk about, you know, so that maybe I could say, you know, hey, call me in January. We could talk more. And, you know, I could, you know, use you guys for some free press, you know, to promote something else I'm doing. So I'm constantly trying to work on new things.
Of course.
But no, I don't get sick of it. In fact, if anything, you know, I've been doing it so long, and it's usually the same questions that people ask,
right?
That you kind of have your basic standard answers that you give.
Mm-hmm. Like when people ask you, are you sick of those answers?
Yeah, you can put a spin on those answers and turn it into your own little comedy routine. Like, yeah. I'm going to Pittsburgh this weekend and I'm doing a Q&A before a movie. I already know the answer. I already know the questions everyone's going to ask me. I know exactly what everyone's, and I have my typical answers that I give. And, you know, that's how you keep it fresh and you keep it fun.
Right.
And how, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, there are times, you know, there are some people that you meet during this that you go, please go away, leave me alone. But that's with anybody that you're going to meet in life. There are people that you meet, there are fans that I've met, and I'm like, oh my God, you're so cool, we should go hang out. And then there are some people that are like, I need you out of here. I can't deal with you anymore. So, but that's just human nature, you know? And, you have to at least appreciate the fact that, you know, it's got a second life,
right?
And that you get to do this, you get a second chance. I mean, because this movie went away for 20 years and nobody said anything about it.
It's interesting you said.
Which also kind of makes you go, hey, this movie was out in 1983. Where were all of you? But, you know, you can't think that way. You just have to sit there, count your blessings and say, you know what? Thank you.
Yeah.
I'm glad this movie got a second life.
Absolutely.
You know, I wish Bob could be here. Bob Clark could be here to see all this, because this was his vision and his dream. Mm-hmm. That's the most important thing. Is that he's the one who should be, you know, calling. That's the person that everybody should be calling up and asking questions, not us.
Right.
He's the one. You know, Rene DuPont, the executive producer, Gene Shepard, who wrote the stories. I mean, Darren McGavin. I mean, those were all the guys that put all the effort into this movie and made it what it is. You know, we were just lucky enough to be a part of it. So
it's interesting. You know, like you were a child actor. We had Robbie Rist on the podcast. He was cousin mm-hmm. Oliver in the Brady Bunch, and he actually was like Michelangelo's mm-hmm. voice. Really cool guy. But he was talking about like child acting, and you know, like in your experience, was it like did you have like the normal like go to school and then work on film, or did you have like your own kind of separate you know? Did you?
I had a completely normal life.
Oh, okay.
Growing up. That was one thing my parents, you know, wanted.
Right.
I went to public school. It was weird. I was just the kid that went to school, like especially in public school and elementary school. I was the kid that would maybe be gone for like 1 week out of the month.
Okay.
And it was like, oh, Ian's not here. He must be working on a TV show. And then I come back to school and they go, oh, what show are you on? It's like, oh, I was doing Different Strokes. Oh, cool. And want to go play kickball? Yeah. And then we go outside and play kickball. That would be it. You know, it wasn't like, you know, the celebrity, you know, yeah, where I walked in and everybody applauded. It was just, oh, it's, you know, Ian, you know, was in a movie and Ian, you know, would be gone. But I mean, I had all the normal things that kids had. I rode bikes, you know, we rode them down, got in trouble, did yep. everything that normal kids did. Mm. I just, every now and then I couldn't go hang out with my friends because I had an audition. So, you know, my friend was like, hey, you coming over? I'm like, I can't. I got to go, you know, I got to audition for Nabisco or something. So maybe later. And that was about it. But, yeah, I mean, completely normal life, even up to, like, high school. You know, I still went to high school. I still, you know, got picked on. I, you know, went to prom. I did all that normal stuff, all that BS that you have to go through, you know, adolescence. You know, I wasn't taken away from any of that. So,
now you were pretty much consistent child acting till like 87. Did you take a break from it? Were you sick of it? Was it just not fun?
No, I wasn't sick of it. And In fact, I think 87. I mean, I continued on. I see up until about my last gig. I think I was about 17, and I was on my last gig was actually Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, 87. Last one was My Sister Sam. Then 91 was Beverly Hills 90210.
Yeah, and then after that, what happened was we had a changing of agents. We had a new agent come in, and she just wasn't pushing as much as the old agent was. Mm-hmm. And actually got to a point where I was actually working, but I was getting cast as the friend a lot for a lot of shows. Like, they would, I guess you can call it, I was falling into the actor's friend zone, I guess you would say. Mm-hmm. And I didn't mind that, actually. You know, I was happy just to be working. So they'd send me out for the lead, and they'd say, that was a really good reading, but we're going to have you read for the friend. And so I would read for the friend, and they're like, that was perfect. You got the part. And then it got to a point where I was going out so much that I got to know casting agents. And they wouldn't even audition me. They would just call up the agency and say, look, we got one line. We just want Ian to do it. That's it. We're not even going to audition him.
Interesting.
That's pretty cool. You know, you're already like in high school, junior high,
yeah,
or whatever, and you're pretty much working a consistent level. And then the agents started turning those down.
Okay.
And they started saying, no. He's actually worth, you know, he's better than that. We want him to do the lead. But you don't, that's the thing. It's like, you don't turn those down.
Right, right.
And that's what they were doing, is they were turning down work. And that's like basically cutting, your throat in the industry, is when you turn down work.
You
piss off a casting agent, you know, that's, they're like, well, fine, then we're never going to deal with you again. And I was very upset. And I went down to my agent and I told him, I said, why are you doing that? And they said, because we think that we want you to be better. You know, at the time, Leonardo DiCaprio was the hot thing. That's what they wanted to create. They wanted to create the next Leo. And I told them, I go, look at me. Do I look like I'm going to be? Not at all. I'm supposed to be his buddy. That's the thing. I'm his friend.
Enjoy the Titanic.
I'm Leo's corny, dorky friend. I'm not going to be Leo. So
it's like, Leo, look out for that bear.
Killing my career. So after that, I kind of stepped down for a bit. I said, you know, I left the agency. I went to go find a new agency. They didn't turn out to be any better. And I said, all right, I'm going to step down. And then I wanted to study comedy. And so I studied comedy improv at Groundlings in Los Angeles, California.
All right.
Groundlings is a very famous comedy improv school, especially nowadays. A lot of big people have come out of Groundlings, you know, even back then. And that's when I met a good buddy of mine, Dan Lake.
Right.
And he was part of a production company from Chicago that moved out to L.A., and so I joined up with them and was just doing some behind-the-scenes production work. And that's when I got into puppeteering.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you. I read a little thing about you that you got into puppeteering, which I definitely want to talk about.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's how I got into puppeteering, because a lot of the shows that they were doing were puppet-based. But more like puppeteering and puppetry for adults. Not necessarily raunchy, just... you know, stuff that adults can watch. It wasn't, you know, fuzzy puppets teaching you the ABCs. It was, you know, puppets growing up.
Teaching you the birds and the bees. No.
Right, exactly. So, and that, you know, puppeteering was something that I've always been into, you know, especially as a kid, because I loved Jim Henson. I loved the Muppets growing up. So I was working on a show, and I was just there like to help out and build sets and paint and everything. And I saw one of the puppets, and I said, can I play with it? We were on a break. And the director, so my friend was like, yeah, go ahead. So I put the puppet on, I started performing it. And he goes, you're actually really good. Put the paintbrush down and get in front of the camera with that puppet. And that's basically started the puppeteering career.
So. That's awesome. So like, where did you go with that?
After that, we did the show, and then I got to work on a movie with them, and that was really adult puppeteering because I got to actually do a whole this movie called The Item.
Okay.
You can find it on DVD and on Netflix. Go for it. It's a bizarre movie.
All right.
But the ending is probably the weirdest part of the whole movie. But I got to do the puppeteering for it. And it was basically I got to do a sex scene with a girl, the puppet. There you go. And
wow.
Just go rent it. Go rent it. Check it out. I don't need to explain. I'd rather have you guys see it, you know. It's a very, very, very bizarre movie, but I do about pretty much like 85% of the puppeteering work in that film. So, and then that got me, you know, after that, then I worked on Ninja Turtles.
Oh, okay. The movie?
I got to do all the, not the movie. Remember, I don't know if you remember in the 90s when they had their own television show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was Ninja Turtles, The Next Mutation.
Yep. I even had the videos and, like the Coming Out of My Shell tour. I was pretty big into that.
Yeah.
Where they dressed like, and, they basically dressed like Kiss and performed songs live. It was pretty interesting. But anyway.
Yeah. And they did a crossover episode with the Power Rangers.
No.
Because the Ninja Turtles, that was filmed in Vancouver, and then they brought them down to California and did a crossover episode with the Power Rangers. So
really?
I did all of Michelangelo's facial expressions. I did all of his animatronics for that episode.
Sweet. We are like the Michelangelo podcast. with Robbie Riss,
too. Robbie Riss, you said he did Michelangelo?
Yeah, he was Michelangelo's voice in the movie.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. And then I think he did it. He said he did his voice in like.
I think the latest, the TMNT.
Something else.
Series.
He came back and did it again in a cartoon or something series. Like that. But yeah, he did that.
Okay.
He,
yeah. I mean, that's cool. It's weird because I don't know Robbie Riss personally, but I remember I was supposed to do a part in a movie, and because I couldn't do it, he actually got to do the part.
There you
and
go.
He was in Sharknado.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, nice.
It's a small world, huh? Like, it's crazy. Yeah, Robbie
yeah,
was a really cool
guy. Remember
that
part in Sharknado with Robbie Riss? He played the bus driver?
The first one? The
yeah.
I'd have to watch it again, but yeah, I remember him talking about
okay.
it.
Okay.
Yep.
But I knew the director, and he called me up, and he said, you know, hey, I want you to
man.
Do this movie, and it was the logistics, and I couldn't get there. And
could
then,
have had two cult classics.
Yeah, and I remember seeing it, and it was Robbie Riss who got the part. So it's kind of weird that you
that
know,
is weird.
I guess there's like this little like degree of separation between me and Robbie Riss. You know, you did the voice for Michelangelo, I did space. I couldn't do Sharknado, and he got to do it.
Yeah.
That, you know,
that's funny. Yeah, he was a really really cool dude. He's like very into like his music now, from what I understand. Like,
that's what I hear. He's like a headbanger now or something.
Yeah, he plays a bunch of bands and stuff like that. Very cool dude. Very like super high energy kind of guy. A lot of energy.
But,
So what are you doing nowadays? Like, what's going on in your world now?
Well, no, I mean, I'm still doing the puppeteering thing.
Okay.
You know, I had to get out of it for a while, but it's actually starting to make a comeback in the industry. So I'm trying to jump back on the bandwagon for it. So that's what I've been kind of focusing on, is doing that. I've been working with a company up in Pittsburgh called Pittsburgh Puppet Works. So I work with them a lot. They do a lot of stage stuff. I'm trying to put together a few movie ideas. That's what I want to get into, and that's what I want to do. You know, I figured physically, you know, for puppeteering, I maybe got 10, 15 years left, because puppeteering is a very physical thing.
Okay.
It does, especially if you're going to do it for like film and television. You know, it's very physical. You got to be, you got to be pretty. You gotta be in fairly decent shape. So I'm just trying to think. It's like, I don't know how much longer. I mean, I'm 42. So, you know, who knows how much longer I have to do puppeteering, you know, for what I want to do. So I'm trying to put a rush on and develop some ideas that I could either just, you know, throw on film or, you know, do a web series or something.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as that happens, I'd be more than happy to give you guys a call and let you know.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I don't have any too many details right now of, you know, what to say, unfortunately. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's the plan. I mean, that's what I've been focusing on right now.
Sounds good.
Some people have been calling me. One guy in LA, you know, got a hold of me, and he, you know, a film director in LA, and I haven't seen any of his work, but I've seen just like clips and trailers, and he seems to, you know, have a lot of good. He's working on a movie called Myra right now, and he's putting something together, and he basically was one of those things where he said, "I'm a big fan of the film. It'd be fun to have you in my movie."
Mm-hmm.
And I've been getting quite a few of those lately.
Hmm.
You know, almost kind of like that Quentin Tarantino, you know, just thought it'd be cool to put, you know, John Travolta in one of his movies because he was a fan of Welcome Back, Kotter.
Right.
So that's one of the things I always said is everyone said, would you get back into acting? And I said, you know, I totally would. But for me, it's, you know, it's not just going out and getting the agent. I got to meet that Quentin Tarantino. I got to meet that guy that says, I think it would be cool to put Randy in a movie.
Hey, can you call us when you get a hold of Quentin Tarantino?
Yeah,
maybe
yeah,
drop our name
yeah,
or
yeah,
something?
Yeah. So.
That's awesome, man. Well, good luck with all the projects you got going on. You know, did you ever know there was a ska band called Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie?
Nope, yep. I did not know that.
They were from somewhere around here. I think they were in Jersey somewhere, but I remember being like...
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Maybe Ohio. I can't remember where they're from, but yeah, they were like I'm pretty sure they were a ska band, but yeah, they're called Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie, but Ian...
I should find them, check them out, and I'll maybe like drop them an email and say, you know, hey, you know, let me know when you're in town. I'll come see your show.
Yeah, you should sing a song with them or
look
something.
Look back at your old script. Look at the six lines you said and see if there's a band named after each one.
Meatloaf, yeah. Beatloaf, I hate meatloaf.
I think there was another band or something that was named after, like, Scott Farkas or something.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I remember we were attending... an appearance, and Zach Ward was there, and somebody came up and said, yeah, there's a band called like Scott Farkas Revenge or something. I don't know.
I'm sure there
so
is.
There's all these little bands out there, you know, that I think, you know, they have these like, you know, odd names and odd everything. So, but no, I'll look them up. Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie.
That was the name of the band. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they were ska. Don't quote me on it, but I remember like maybe in high school or they were definitely a band for a while. Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie. But
wow.
There's a band and apparently there's a beer also named that.
Oh, a beer.
At
well,
least according to Google.
Beer, that's cool. But So
there's a beer called Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie, or
yeah, apparently Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie is from Slapshot Brewing Company.
Mm, there you go.
Shout out to them.
I actually, it's funny you say that. I think when I was brewing beer and I had my little sign in my basement back in the day, I think I made something called like Daddy's Gonna Kill Ralphie or something like that. But anyway, so Ian, where can people go to check you out or send you a message or see what's going on with you?
Facebook, Twitter, just type in my name, Ian Petrella.
All right. Simple. Short.
That's the best way to get a hold of me and everything. So that's really the only way to get a hold of me. So.
All right, man. Ian, thank you so much for popping on. I don't want to take up all your time, but
that's all right.
Christmas is coming, man, and I'll probably, like I said, it's like this nostalgic feeling to kind of pop on Christmas Story on Christmas Eve, and like our family, we always got it on in the background, and be looking forward to you and your coats and your scarf. I can't put my arms down.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My six lines.
Hey, there's six memorable lines, man. And
Randy's lines wouldn't be a good drinking game. You know, take a shot every time. It would be six shots. It's over.
You'd have to watch the movie a few times. No, but but it's awesome that you came on, man. And thanks for popping on real quick. And happy holidays. And
no problem.
And have
you
a good Christmas, man.
Yeah. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas to you and everyone.
Hey, you guys. I'm Solo here. And this is something that also came out last minute, a couple days after the podcast. But I feel like I had to put it in there. or I'm going to have to put it in here. I got in touch with a Christmas Story house. It's a museum now, and it is the house that the movie was filmed in, and they turned it into a museum. So I got in touch with one of the curators, I guess you should say, from the museum. So we're going to learn a little bit about the Christmas Story house. Yeah, so Ralphie's house, and I guess Randy's house, too, you could say. But so I'm going to give him a call. I'm pretty excited about this. It's a kind of get a different look into different things here. All right, let's see how this goes.
Steven speaking. May I help you?
Hey, Steve. This is Scott Brennan from the Verbal Shenanigans podcast.
Hey, Scott.
How's it going, Steve? You got a few minutes
here?
Good
to hear from you. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Steve. First off, what do you do at the Christmas Story Museum? I guess I should call it the house and museum is the official name, I guess. But
Go ahead.
So I guess it's is this a full time place? Is it just open during the Christmas season? So,
well, a Christmas Story house and museum is open pretty much all year round, and my position is curator, and also I do a lot of the graphic design.
Oh, nice.
And curator is a pretty lofty title, but essentially what I do is this is a fancy way of saying that I try to make everything look nice in the museum and try to keep the collection from deteriorating.
Yeah. So now this house, when they filmed the movie, was it just a regular house on a block, or was it a set and turned into a house? Like, how did it work?
It was just a house. Gene Shepard, and that's the guy that wrote the stories that became A Christmas Story,
right.
And Bob Clark were looking for kind of a specific look,
mm-hmm.
and they came to Cleveland, and they were driving around, and I guess the house was right there, and they said, that's the one.
Were there people living in it at the time, or?
Yeah, there were, and I think they wrote him a check and said, hey, can we use this place for a couple months, and
that's it.
Magic happened.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes the movie is so well done as like a period piece that you forget that it wasn't made until the 80s. Like, you know, you have kids who think it's like a movie that's made in the 60s or the, you know, because it has such an authentic feel to that, you know, 40s, 50s era.
Yeah, it really does kind of capture what it must have been like.
Now, first off, how do you get the gig of working at the Christmas Story House and being the curator of the of the museum?
Well, actually, this is kind of how it happened. Was I was living in New Orleans with my wife, and we decided that we didn't really, you know, we were Ohioans at heart, so we moved back to Cleveland.
Okay.
Didn't really know what to do, and I saw this ad for answering phones during the Christmas season,
uh-huh.
and I said, hey, this is something that could kind of bridge before I find something else, and here I am a few years later.
So when did the museum open? Like 2 years ago?
10 years ago.
Oh, 10 years ago.
This is our 10th anniversary.
Wow. Now, do you get obviously during this time of year, it's probably you're busy. I know you guys even said it when I was messaging you guys on Facebook. But do you get like flocks of people? Is it like a steady stream of people? Or is it like kind of a museum that's just visited every once in a while?
We got a pretty steady stream of people. It's we estimate about 65,000 people visit a year. And about half of those are from Thanksgiving to Christmas.
Wow. That's awesome. So, like, give us a little idea of if we're driving through Cleveland, we want to stop in, what kinds of things would you see at the museum other than, you know, the exterior of the house? Like, we go in the house, what are we going to see? The leg lamp, hopefully?
You'll definitely see the Red Ryder Carbon Action 200 Shot Range Model Air Rifle with a compass in the stock and the thing which tells time. We acquired that last year.
Really?
And it's kind of like the crown jewel of our collection.
That's awesome. Who had it? Where was that?
There were six of them made because they had to be custom created, and they just kind of disappeared. and one showed up on auction last year.
That's awesome. That's that's pretty cool. So what other kinds of things will we see?
Well, we have a 1938 Oldsmobile touring sedan that was in the film, and it's the old man's car.
That's awesome.
And we have a 1939 Ford fire truck, which all the kids really love.
Yep.
It's not the one from the film because that's still in use in Chippewa, New York.
Really?
But it's really beautiful. If you have an interest in like classic cars,
yeah,
it's,
definitely,
really something. So then, you know, the museum also has lots of costumes. We have Black Bart's costumes. We have the Chinese restaurant waiter's costumes. We have you spoke with Ian, right?
Yes.
We have his snowsuit, you know,
can't
put my arms down.
I can't put my arms
down.
We
have we have bibs. We have different hats. Probably my all-time favorite thing that we have, besides the BB gun, would have to be Scott Farkas's Foxford hat.
Yes, iconic.
Yeah,
it goes with his yellow eyes.
Yeah, and it's just really it's probably my favorite thing to check out when I'm inside the museum.
Now, like when people come to this thing, do they like is it something that would take a while to look through, or is it kind of a smaller museum? Like, is the house set up as the house, or is the museum throughout the house? How does that like work?
All right. Well, there's two buildings. There's the A Christmas Story house,
okay,
and then across the street is the A Christmas Story House Museum.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
So the house is set up as close as we could possibly set it up to be like the Parker's residence in the film.
Is the big Christmas tree in there?
There's a big Christmas tree in there. There is, we have a radio to listen to Little Orphan Annie.
Nice. Is the furnace more work?
That's actually something that we're working on.
That'd be funny. Right now, some black smoke billowing out of the basement.
Oh, we've got some ideas.
That's awesome.
So we have that. The kids' room is set up. It's a really fun experience. Depending on who your tour guide is, there's a good chance that you're going to be forced into wearing pink bunny pajamas from Aunt Clara.
Lovely.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So that's the house, and then across the street is where we have the artifacts.
That's cool. So is someone's, like, neighbor the Christmas Story house? Like, like is the house next door just a normal house?
Yes. It's, It's in a residential neighborhood, and some neighbors get in on it. It's pretty fun. We have recently set up a few years ago, we set up a foundation. It's called the Christmas Story House Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And what we do is provide grants to neighborhood houses.
Oh, great.
To, you know, help paint the house, repair fences. We install new windows, that kind of thing. Just a way to say thank you for, you know, being great neighbors.
Well, that's a good idea. You guys also do on the website it says you do a 5K and a 10K too?
Yes. We usually get about 5,000 participants, people dressed up as leg lamps, pink nightmares. Pretty much any character, no matter how obscure, it's you'll see them at the run.
That's awesome. Now, do you ever guys ever get any of the cast members to come back? Or?
Well, Ian Petrella, Randy Parker, he was our guest of honor for the run.
All right.
And then this past summer, Zach Ward, who played Scott Farkas, he came around. And I know that you're going to publish this on Monday, so it'll be after this. But tomorrow we're going to have Patty Johnson, who is the head elf,
yeah,
the one that's screaming at the kids.
That's great.
So she's going to be around signing autographs. She's really sweet.
Now, you work there all year long. Do you ever get sick of the movie? Do you ever get sick of talking about the movie? Are you just amazed by its reach? You know, like I was talking to Ian last night, and he was, you know, I was asking him why he thought this movie had so much staying power, and he's like, you know, everyone kind of has a different opinion, you know. But and I asked him if he got sick of it, and he said no, he doesn't. He's just like, he sometimes he's amazed that it's gone this long, like, because it really was kind of in the dark for 20 years and kind of exploded. And he says he wishes, like, Bob Clark was, he really wishes, like, he could see what happened with his movie. So do you ever get sick of talking about Christmas Story?
No, not at all, actually. It's kind of strange because being a graphic designer, I do a lot of our social media. So kind of what I have to do is take things that occur in 2016, filter them through a lens of a film that takes place either in the late 1930s or early 1940s, and filmed, you know, almost 35 years ago.
Right.
So that's a pretty interesting perspective that I have on the world these days.
Right.
But, I mean, it's really fun.
I
can't think of a better way to make a living.
Absolutely. Now, there's something on your site, with the chance to stay at the Christmas Story House. Tell us about that. There was a little charity auction, I guess?
Yeah, so every year we put the house up on auction. It's just a really fun way to, you know, people want to stay at the house, and this is their opportunity to do it.
That's funny. So what, do they come and, like, bring sleeping bags and stuff? Like, how does that work?
No, we have, you know, they could spend the night in Randy and Ralphie's room, or that's upstairs funny. There's a little loft where the owner stays when he visits. So
that's pretty neat. That's pretty neat. So if you were to go to the Christmas Story House, what does it cost to, like, go see it?
It depends. All tickets are $11.
Oh, okay.
And I think it's okay, so adults 11, children 3 to 12 is 7, and children 2 and under is free.
Oh, well, seniors, worth it.
60 plus, $9, and military and veterans may purchase up to 4 admission tickets at 50% off.
So, do you ever find yourself watching the movie still?
Christmas? Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Really?
It's, yeah. Usually, it's pretty much on all day when I go over my mom's house for Christmas.
Yep. That's what I was telling Ian that yesterday. It's kind of become like a staple on, like, Christmas Eve, you know, with my family. It's kind of just on, you know, in the background. And you walk into the room, like, oh, I'll watch this scene for 5 minutes, walk out, come back in, watch a different scene for a few minutes. It's kind of become like, hey, it's Christmas Eve, let's pop on Christmas Story.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen it from beginning to end.
Right.
But the film itself is great because it's essentially a bunch of little vignettes, so seeing it out of order doesn't really hurt anything.
Yeah. All right, man. So last question, I guess, is if people wanted to go check out either a website or get in touch with you or see some things on the museum, where can they go?
That's easy, www.christmasstoryhouse.com, and all the information that they need will be on there. They can visit us on Facebook, which is facebook.com/A Christmas Story House. And then, you know, we have Twitter and Instagram, all the rest. So.
Great. I was getting my last question. So I asked it to Ian, why do you think this movie has lasted this long and seems to be never going away, if not, you know, getting bigger into the tradition and fabric of Christmas in the United States? Like, why do you think this is not gone away, and why do you think people love it so much?
You know, I mean, it's just it's just real, you know, everything that the kids deal with, mm-hmm. everything that, like, pretty much every character deals with is something that all of us have to deal with in our day-to-day lives.
Right.
So when you watch this film, you see, you see what's happening right around you, and it's a pretty interesting reflection.
See, I always found the characters like very relatable to either, hey, that was kind of like me and my brother at age whatever, you know, fifth grade, and you know, the dad has some of my dad in him, you know, like that old school, like I'll fix it myself kind of dad, and the mom is super sweet, and like I find a lot of like, I don't know, my family friend and the bullies at school. I think that's what to me was always so like. I think that's what makes it really funny. I think it's all the characters were so well done.
Yeah, it really, really strikes chord with, like, I mean, just all the characters are just so well fleshed out.
Right, and I think it's just casted so well. Like, everyone fits.
Oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But, Steve, thank you so much for giving me a couple minutes, and I'll send you the link when this is up.
Hey, that sounds great.
Awesome. Thanks so much, man.
Yeah. It was my pleasure. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. All right. That was Ian Petrello from Christmas Story.
Yeah. Yeah, interesting interview. Nice guy.
Yeah, right, definitely. It's fun to hear
puppets having sex, yeah.
Yeah. They must get bombarded with people like me.
Yeah. Well, that's why my first question was around December 2nd. It's like, ugh.
Mm-hmm. Here we go. It's Christmas Story season.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. I'm totally down to do my little hacky radio. It's all right. I just got a message from one of the weird guys. I forget this guy that used to hang out at the Watson Show. He had a big mustache.
I know who you're talking about.
He just texts me a message. I'm passing the light of peace, love, and prosperity to you.
I've been getting that, too.
For 2017. It's pretty cool. Don't kill it. Pass it on. If you wish to pass it forward, hold finger on picture and say, forward.
Yeah. You know who's the first person who sent it to me? Remember the guy who basically told me I eat too loud on my last pumpkin spice whatever?
Oh, but he sent it to you.
Well, what happened was, like, after I showed you that, I send him a Facebook message. I'm like, hey, you know, I'm trying to play it off and whatever. I'm like, you know, why don't you come up on the show? And, you know, we can talk. I'll bring up the IM here. But it was, hey, thanks for your feedback on my video. If you're interested, my podcast buddy would love to talk to you on your funny comment on our podcast. And then he replied, dude, I'm sorry about that. Under a lot of stress. We've been evacuated from our home due to wildfires. Don't know whether our house is standing. In the words of Mike Birbiglia, what I should have said was nothing. My apologies, my friend. And then...
You should have just replied, karma, bitch.
And then after that, just out of the blue, he sent me the passing light thing.
Oh. Well, you got the passing light there.
Oh, and I also got it from David John Jr.
Oh, yes. That's who I got it from. Here.
Oh, that's the same guy.
What happens when you press the it and hit forward? What happens to it?
Let's see. Forward photo.
It just says new normal forward.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow. But
was it supposed to do?
I don't know. It said say hold it and say forward or something. I don't know. I don't
forward.
I've never participated in one of those Facebook things.
Copy, delete, forward, or save.
And that's probably why my life's the way it is, because I do not forward those things. I do not share things that say pray for this child. I do not, you know, say if you share this many times, you'll get this many likes. I just don't care.
I was the guy who always broke the chain letter.
Yep, I'm the
it's just the dumbest thing.
I'm the worst. But I think this was 2 years ago. Remember I talked about all these crazy like Christmas traditions around the world?
Yeah, I remember that game.
Well, I found some more.
Oh.
You know, you have Krampus. You've heard of Krampus before.
Of course.
We heard of that little elf that like poops and stuff like that, if you go back. But I figured we'd bring a couple up. There's some very interesting ones. So let's find a few of these. The first one is La Befana. La Befana is an Italian Christmas witch.
Okay.
The Italian Christmas witch. Not terrifying in any way, but a very strange legend. She's pictured as an old woman who flies on a broomstick and carries a large bag.
I feel like that's every Italian woman.
Yeah, pretty much.
According to the old folklore tale, she visits children on Epiphany Eve to determine if they have been naughty or nice. Very much like Santa, if the kids have been nice, she rewards them with gifts and candy. If they've been naughty, she leaves them with a dark lump of coal. What do you think about that? Are you a believer in La Bafana?
No. Just doesn't ring the bells. You know?
I gotta call Dom and see if he's a believer in Lava. I should call him right now.
La Bafana.
Hey, La Bafana. The Italian Christmas witch.
I got so much manicotti from a.
You know what? Sometimes inspiration comes to you.
Hit it.
Let's see if Dom is on the line. Dom is one of our one listener.
Our fan. Yeah.
Dom is our big fan. Yeah. Let's see.
2-time guest or 3-time?
I don't even know. Let's just see real quick. It'd be funny if he does answer. I'm just going to ask him if he believes in the Christmas witch and hang up.
Thank you.
But yeah, La Bafana, the Italian Christmas witch. It's La Bafana. But I don't know. I'll see if Dom answers. Hey Dom, it's Scott. You may know me from high school or the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, but
me too.
We need you to call back into the show because I'm going over weird Christmas traditions, and apparently there's an Italian Christmas witch named La Bafana. So we're gonna need you to call in and clarify about La Bafana. So call us back when you can. We're recording now, so please feel free to call in. Guido.
Hi.
All right. So you've heard of Santa, you've heard of Krampus, but have you ever heard of Gryla? Oh, hi, Dom. Is this Dom Bagnato?
Did we get
Dom? It's you're on the air. I just left you a message.
Oh.
But I had to clarify something real quick. We're reading about weird Christmas traditions for the Christmas episode. Right?
Yeah.
And apparently, La Bafana is an Italian Christmas witch.
Witch, yeah. I have also read that.
No.
I am aware of this, but it's not something that my family does specifically.
So
but when I did read about it a few years ago, I asked my mom about it. She was aware of it, so it is a thing.
Really?
Is that like a regional thing in Italy?
Probably, yeah. I mean, everything is regional. It's only like basically a bunch of different.
It's a northwest kind of witch, La Bafana, northwest Italy.
So, yeah. So I'm going over like these weird traditions, which I did a couple years ago, but I found some new ones. And La Bafana, the Italian Christmas witch, popped up. I didn't know if that was an actual thing, but apparently you answered it before I even finished the sentence.
It is definitely a thing, but like I said, I only know about it by reading about it and then kind of asking about it. We never actually did anything like that with my family specifically.
Now, do you go to Italian malls and sit on the witch's lap? Is that how it works? Is it just an old Italian woman going, get off me?
No, you sit on the broom with her for the photo.
That's what I was going to say. It's hard to tell if it's a witch or just an old Italian lady.
Well, that's what I said.
But yes.
The way this site describes her is like an old Italian with a broomstick in a large bag. I'm like, I think that's all Italian grandmas.
Yeah. Well, they have like, La Strega or whatever. Like, they have other words for witches, too. Like, witches in Italian culture are a little bit, it's different than, I mean.
You call them black people, right? In Italian.
But there are a lot of witch traditions and customs and folklore.
Right.
Yeah. I heard you're only considered naughty if you call it sauce instead of gravy. That's the judgment of La Bafana.
No, if you would attend a Olive Garden. If you go to the Olive Garden once per year, you're doomed.
That's another one though where my family is weird because we call it sauce too, and everybody always like comes up to me and they're like, "Oh, it's gravy, right?" And they're like, "No, we call it sauce." So I don't know what the hell.
If only half your chest has chest hair on it, you're naughty. That's what I heard.
Yeah. Well, thank you for clearing. If you're interested, I would like to co-produce the La Bufana movie. Never been done before, so Living Daylight and Verbal Shenanigans collaboration, La Bufana.
Sounds like a plan. I'm surprised. I'm sure there are many Italian versions of it already. Actually, maybe I should look some of those up.
Yeah, we should look. You know what? Maybe we could do a whole episode about the whole history of La Bufana.
I'm into it. I think we find some Italian version and watch it together.
All right.
Yeah.
Make a game out of it.
All right. That sounds great, actually. You look up some La Bufana stuff. I will, too. And we'll see who can become the La Bufana master and know more about it.
We'll call it the Italian Witch Project.
Yeah. Hello. We'll call it the Hair Witch Project. All right. No. I know. It's
all right.
It's getting. It's only getting worse. All right. Let's do the La Bufana off one day in the podcast.
I like it.
And see what kind of things we can come up. We could also come up with some kind of sketch where we interview different Christmas things that are kind of left out.
La Bufana in July.
You know, because the next one, Dom. Maybe stay on the line for a minute if you have a second.
Okay.
You ever heard of Gryla? Gryla. Gryla is a mountain giant or troll. According to Icelandic folklore, she travels from mountains in search of naughty children. When she finds them, she abducts them and eats them.
Jesus.
That's pretty harsh, you know?
That's
it's like,
Jesus?
It's like either get a present or get eaten, you know? There's no middle line, there's no middle of the road.
Yeah, what the hell?
But it's
always amazing how many cultures need to scare kids.
Yeah, it's amazing how it's always Iceland. Because next you have the Yule Lads. In another Icelandic legend, the Yule Lads range from being bloodthirsty murderers to mischievous pranksters. So there's a fine line there. Originally, there were 13 Yule Lads that would travel from the mountains where they live with their mother Gryla. There it is. Gryla is the mother to the villages to scare unsuspecting victims. They take turns visiting kids 13 days before Christmas. Each Yule Lad leaves a small gift for nice kids or a rotten potato for naughty kids. The threat doesn't seem too bad. It's like you can get eaten by Gryla or the Yule Lads will give you a bad potato.
So is it like The Ring? Where if I get a rotten potato, I'm going to be dead in 13 days? I don't get it.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm. This is a tough one to pronounce, but it's worth the listen. Jolaka Torin. Guess where he's from? Iceland. Mm. He is the Icelandic... He's the Icelandic Christmas cat, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
He's the Icelandic Christmas cat, and he dates back to the 19th century. According to legend, Jolaka Torin is a huge cat that roams the streets around Christmas time, of course, preying on those who don't wear new clothes.
What?
So, apparently...
So, if I go to the Salvation Army, I'm going to get eaten by a cat in Iceland.
Listen, those unable to buy new clothes for the holidays, the Yule cat eats... Some say the story was created to make people work harder around the holiday period.
That seems messed up. They're eating their kids. I mean, it's not my fault my dad can't make enough bucks for me to get some sweet threads.
Yeah, because that's the only thing messed up about the story. The fact that it's a giant cat that eats poor people.
Yeah, but my point is, you're threatening the kids when it's the family that's at fault.
This is going to be like in the Trump's Trump's cabinet. We got to hire Jolaka Torin. I heard he's great. It's poor children.
If we send cats out to eat Mexicans, we won't have to build that wall.
Saving money. Big cat. Cats don't need a lot. You ever
Project
hear of that,
under Tom? Budget and on time.
Ever hear what?
You ever hear of that? The cat that eats poor people?
No.
La Bufana seems a lot more reasonable than Iceland.
But. Yeah, absolutely. Iceland is, they have a huge, pretty big country, and they have less people than, New Jersey. So they have to make a lot of time making up stories.
But what they do have is one of the best soccer chants pretty much ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. They were pretty magical this past World Cup. I got to give it to them.
The Euro Cup.
Euro Cup.
That was pretty magical, and it definitely gave me chills. Like especially when they said 98% of Iceland watched the game and shut down. So, meaning like if you said there's like 400,000 people or something like that. So basically like 300.
Yeah, I remember them saying that.
Yeah.
They were saying it was like 300 or 330,000 people or something like that. And we're like, one game I remember them saying there are 30,000 Icelanders here. So there's 10% of the entire population of Iceland is watching, like at this game watching it right now.
That's awesome. And then they did that, the Viking chant in the middle, like when they came back home and like half the freaking country attended the ceremony or something like that.
Yeah,
which goes to show Europeans do—they don't really go to work.
I just feel bad for that 2%. That's some dudes
they have
in
their priorities, right?
Yeah, some 2%. Some dudes in a cubicle in Iceland and all doing spreadsheets and I could be Viking chanting.
That would
right
be
now.
Icelandic Berlu.
That sounds like a character to me.
Icelandic Berlu. Oh man.
I'm in the cubicle doing spreadsheets. Oh damn it! There's a cat here to eat me. Son of a bitch.
All right. You guys have, of course, heard of Bellsnickel, right? Everyone's.
That's the Bella twins.
Everyone's heard of Bellsnickel.
Yeah.
Well, this creepy fellow originates from the Middle Ages in Europe. He was one of the first to separate the good kids from the naughty. However, he did allow kids to redeem themselves. See, so he's already a step ahead of the Icelandic people. It's pretty much if you're poor, if you're misbehaved, you get eaten. However, he did allow... He did allow to redeem himself if they've been bad all year. Throughout the year, the mass Bellsnickel will leave candy in nice kids' houses and leave naughty kids with a switch. Although he never used a switch on the kids, the stories vary. In some stories, he would leave the bad kids with nothing. In other stories, he would either abduct them and never let them go home or take them to a forest to punish them for their bad behavior.
He's just it's like my uncle.
Or Adrian Peterson is Bellsnickel. Well, you guys are both experts on Frau Perchta, right? You guys know Frau Perchta. You know, she's this scary lady who would roam the countryside during winter and enter homes between Christmas and Epiphany, according to the Bavarian and Austrian cultures. If kids and servants had been nice, she'd leave them with a silver coin. If they hadn't been, you know, she would cut open their abdomen and take out their organs and replace them with straw.
Seems like a fair trade.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean,
Austria might win.
Yeah, Europe just seems to be, you know, scare your children to death.
Yeah, Americans aren't cramping their pants when December 25th comes around. We got to change something.
I've seen kids throw fits in Walmart, you know, about what they can't get. If Frau Perchta came and slit their abdomens open or threatened to, I bet you they'd be hit.
I think we should do a couple of those, you know, just not too many, but just enough to give the hint.
Well, you guys...
People don't try to traumatize their children as much as they used to. That's the problem with American children.
Yeah. But you guys, I know both of you guys are experts on pure futard. You know, both of you guys know a lot about them, so I'll explain it to the audience while you guys get your thoughts together. Similar to Knecht Ruprecht, pure futard would accompany St. Nicholas. Originating in France in southern Belgium, the story of pure futard is a pretty sinister one. Pierre Futard, as if they don't have to put his name enough in this paragraph. Mm-hmm. Pierre Futard was a butcher who came across three wealthy boys on the way to boarding school, captured them, and robbed them. Later, he killed them, chopped up their bodies, and kept them in a barrel. After St. Nicholas found out, Pierre Futard was punished and spent the rest of his days following St. Nick. That does not seem like a punishment for putting three kids in a barrel.
Isn't it the plot to Santa's Sleigh with Bill Goldberg?
I don't know.
It sounds about...
I'm not sure if Burley just made that up.
That'd be great.
See, the problem is no one really knows if he's making it up, and that's the scary
part. To be honest,
I'm
not really sure if I know if I'm making it up or not.
I don't know. Like, see, you could tell me anything about wrestling, and I'd believe you. And I'm at the point in my life, if you just
he held the tag team gold for a little while.
If you're just convincing enough, I'm like, all right. Yeah, sure. Why not? Yeah. Dom, you know about Quesada, right? You know, I know you know all about it, so I'll just tell the audience what it is.
I order a Chili's all the time.
In Portugal, it's a tradition for people to wake up early on Christmas morning and have a big feast. The feast is known as Quesada. It honors dead relatives and celebrates ancestors. Families set out extra plates and sometimes leave crumbs on the plate. You see how much more normal... It's funny that that sounds completely normal.
Yeah, I was just waiting for the decapitation to occur. Yeah, when's that come?
I don't know. But that sounds like kind of normal, compared to like gutting children and putting them in barrels. Mm. But...
Yeah.
No?
Dom is such a great call-in.
Well, you have Killy Cantanzaros. He's a malevolent goblin in southeastern folklore.
Okay.
Killy Cantanzaros lives on the ground, but he comes out between Christmas and Epiphany to play pranks on people and scare them. He's like Christmas's jackass.
Oh. Know?
Yeah. So he's pretty much the Grinch of mythology. That's what they call him. Then we got one more, guys. We got one more that you guys, I know, are experts on. That's why I read them to the audience, because I don't want to bore them with your knowledge. Marie Louide. The Marie Louide tradition was once carried out in South Wales. Groups of men would go around door to door with a horse prop made of a horse skull on a stick, asking for entry in the house in a song. So they would ask, please let me in your house. I have a horse head. And you would let them in.
That's your 50-pointer for next year's Shenanigans Showdown.
I'm celebrating Marie Louide. Why you gotta hate on me? Happy holidays. The homeowners would deny entrance through a song, and it would go back and forth. I will not let you in, you creepy horse head. But it would go back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. If the homeowner gave up first, the group of men would be granted access to their home and would be allowed food and drink and basically cause chaos in the house. This sounds like every Christmas Eve at the Brennan's.
Yeah, they get to have their way with the women. That's the rule.
It sounds like one of those college movies. And no, you let me in. Oh, you know what's happening.
Will you let me into your house? No, I won't. Put that creepy horse head down, maybe. You know, like some kind of show tune. But, Dom, we should make some kind of film where we do like a panel of all these like forgotten Christmas characters.
I got the horse head.
We know.
Yeah.
But
I like it.
I like it too. Man, Krampus looks so weak compared to some of these guys.
Mm-hmm.
But
I want to see movies about these traditions.
Dom, what's an Italian Christmas tradition, real quick, before we let you go? What do you guys do on Christmas other than eat?
Eating is a big thing. Christmas Eve.
It doesn't have to be Italian. What about in like your life? Like, what do you guys do? I was just telling.
You know what we do? That's different. That's an Italian thing. Is we play something called tombola.
One more time. Sorry, you broke up for a second. What is it?
It's called tombola.
Okay.
It's basically Italian bingo where there's no letters. So everybody gets like a.
So what you're saying? It's fixed. There's no letter. I won.
Yeah, it's Italian, so we know.
Yeah. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, that's the thing, and a lot of Italian people play. You get everybody gets bored. Numbers on it, and then there's one person who picks numbers out of like a can, basically. And then when you fill up the card, like if you get three in a row, four in a row, five in a row, and then the whole card, you get like a money for each round. It's like each quarter, each card costs say a quarter, and then you get a certain amount of money. So it becomes like this game to pass the time while you're waiting.
All right, that's not bad. Not bad. It's probably if it comes down to winning money, I know in an Italian family, it's definitely fixed. There's definitely some kind of bookie action on it.
Somebody always walks out of the bank not a Christmas.
It gets
with
pretty
legs.
Intense.
But this is new. You did it already, or you're doing it this year?
No, we've done it like every year of my life. They've done it for they used to do it back for nickels back when nickels was a lot. Now it's been quarters for my whole life, but they've been doing that for. I don't know, a long, long time. It's a lot of Italian people do it. But, like, back in, you know, especially back in Brooklyn in the day, like, you'd have, like, 40 people playing. So it would actually be, like, it would add up to a lot of money. Even though it's not actually a lot of money, people will get pretty intense about it.
Awesome. Dom, anything on the film front or any projects you're working on? Might as well ask you why we got you on.
Not too much. I'll talk to you about it another time. But actually, the blog that I was writing about, like lessons learned, making my first feature, is actually going to be turned into a book that's going to come out.
Oh, that's awesome!
So that's cool.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, let us know when that is actually ready to ramp up, and we'll have you on officially instead of calling you in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
But we figured I had to get clarification on La Bufana. Come on.
Yeah.
Who else was I going to go to?
Was La Bufana the horse head or the barrels?
I'll find the definitive version of La Bufana, and I'll bring it over and we'll watch it.
Yeah, we'll do that. We could have a pretty in-depth conversation about it, what we think about it, compare it to movies and stuff. But I also do like the idea of doing a sketch on all these forgotten Christmas characters. But that's for another time and place. But Dom, real quick, I'll spoil for you, but on this episode we have Randy from Christmas Story.
Really?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So it was the Christmas episode, so I went out seeking someone from Christmas Story. So I got Randy. It was pretty cool. It was fun.
Yeah.
So this will be out on Monday. Yep. All right, buddy. Cool. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Have a good night.
Later, man.
So you never know when La Bufana... See, La Bufana spoke to me there. You know, La Bufana was it. But, Burley, you got anything here?
Not really, since I knew about the podcast about 30 minutes before we started.
Yeah. That's definitely true. Do you have anything to promote? Anything to promote? And then we'll get out of here on something else.
Yeah, just to shut him up. Doug Max. La Famigla Sorrento in Westfield, New Jersey, December 21st. The Actors Temple, New York City, December 30th. And January 3rd, the comic strip in New York City. None of them bringer shows. None of them.
So you're promoting Doug Max's shows on our podcast.
If he's going to tag me in 8,000 things and find new ways to annoy me to tell me, I could really use 7 people to show up in New York City.
That is pretty fantastic, buddy. Yeah, that's a heart of gold right there. I got to promote, we're coming up on the Tap House 15 December 29th show.
Yeah.
Very excited because there's something building there that I can't really explain. Maybe the crowd will die down, but there's this interest where we went to the, we didn't even get into that. We'll get into that next time. Your whole car, the car scenario.
Oh, yeah.
Let's hold off for next week. So when we were there Friday, a couple of people at the bar were like, can't wait for the comedy show. So the first show had, we had to bark some people in. The second show, it was full by showtime. The last show was full an hour before showtime. And now I've had like 2 or 3 charities email me just from people who are at the show because I offer them, I say, look, the only thing you got to do is come. That's all you got to do is come, bring some people.
Yeah.
And... Tap House kicks back 10% of all the drinks and food to the charity. We do a 50-50 for the charity, and it's free. So, it's your night out. But on that is going to be headlining is Johnny Watson, Joe Conti, Joanne Filan, Joe Eichler, and myself. So it should be a fun night. That's on the 29th, Thursday, for free.
The Thursday after Christmas.
Yeah, and it's a good – I like it because it's between New Year's and Christmas, so it's just go out for a comedy show. You don't have to spend too much money at all.
No.
And Tap House is awesome. Tap House is just...
They are.
Just, there's nothing really more you can say about that. Now...
Watch Valet.
we'll get into that next week.
Yeah.
Also, next week's episode, which we'll try to tie into our New Year's kind of thing, but Paul Templer's coming back.
Yeah.
So if you wanted a hippopotamus for Christmas... Paul Templer's coming back.
Yeah.
He does not want a hippopotamus for Christmas.
Yeah, no. It's just his children who mocks him with the song.
Yeah, but Paul Templer's coming back on. I'm actually very excited. He's got some new things coming on. And, that was an older, when we're still finding our legs kind of episode. I'm actually going to re-release the episode. I'm going to fix some of the audio things on it.
Nice.
And re-release it, so I'm pretty...
Can you amplify when I had the beer near the
Oh, yeah. That's how you roll.
Damn it, Burley, go!
I want to leave the show tonight. Many years ago, I think it was like 2007 now. I think I told you about this. Me and my buddies, we had this little side project called Project Porpoise.
Oh, Okay.
And we made a Christmas album.
Oh.
And all the Christmas songs were like a twisted...
metal?
A twisted take on Christmas. So like one song was about Rudolph, and the reason his nose was red is because Santa employed him, and he had like a coke habit. And it just kept him going, and that's why he led the sleigh. Another one was about the elves, their working conditions, how they work all year. They never get to celebrate and stuff like that. The other one was when Santa's not home, how Mrs. Claus cheats on it. So stuff like that. We had a lot of fun with it. So I figured I'd leave you with a song. I guess I'm going to go with... this one's called My North Pole Lady. This is all about the cheating Mrs. Claus. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Berlo, goodbye.
Later.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
You too.
We love you.
Anybody else want Doug Mac States? Let me know.
For all of Doug Mac States, go to Mike Berlo's page.
Yeah.